This episode of the Canby Report was recorded on the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Coquitlam peoples. It is January 9th, 2026, and there are 281 days until the Vancouver municipal elections. This is the Canby Report. I'm Ian Bushfield. On today's show, we have a very special set of interviews with the two candidates seeking one city's nomination for mayor of Vancouver, William Azaroff and Amanda Burrows. I'll throw it over to those in a second. You have until January 12th, Monday, to sign up for One City, if that's your chosen party, to vote for either of these individuals. And we will continue to monitor the mayoral race as it continues to shape up over the coming 10 months or so. We'll have lots more episodes to come this year. We're looking forward to it all. In the meantime, please make sure to support the show at patreon.com/CanbyReport. Help us build the show, cover the election, get an invite to our Slack channel where we are discussing it constantly. And I'm really looking forward to you enjoying these interviews. These are two great people, and I hope you enjoy it. Let's throw it over. Well, joining me today on the Canby Report is William Azaroff, candidate for One City Vancouver's mayoral nomination. Welcome to the podcast, William.
Great to be here. Thanks, Ian.
So let's just jump right into it. Who are you, and why do you want to be mayor of Vancouver?
Yeah, well, who I am, I was born and raised in Vancouver, lived elsewhere during my 20s, but I've been working for the last several years in affordable housing, building affordable housing at a nonprofit called Brightside Community Homes Foundation. I've been CEO, and I've been doing a lot of things that are about benefiting the entire community. And why I want to be mayor, I mean, I put a lot of thought into that. And it's funny, when I first started thinking about this, the person I thought of was my son. I've got a 21-year-old son, always been very musical, and really trying to make a go of it in the music sector. Like, he's into a couple bands, and he's really very, very passionate and talented. But I really worry whether there's going to be a place for him in Vancouver. And so thinking about the future with my son, I think about the way I was raised. I was raised by a single mom, a nurse at GF Strong for many, many years. And I just feel like the way she was able to provide a good life for us when I was growing up, I just worry that's not as possible today. And I want to see change in the city and create opportunity for people to stay here, feel like they belong here, and unlock the potential of Vancouver in that way.
And so why go straight to the mayor's chair? Why not run for a one city council seat, for example, or another party? And why one city?
Yeah, let me start with that. I mean, I've been a member of One City for several years. I just found a political home there. I really love the vibrancy, the positivity, the sort of youthfulness, the engagement. So my son, actually, the son I was just talking about, turned 18 on election day 2022. And every time we went to One City kind of a gathering, we just felt at home there. And I became a member at that time, so leading up to the 2022 election. And so there's no other party that I think if they approached me, I would have said yes. That's my home. And why the mayor? Yeah, I mean, that's a fair question. When I think about my experience, I was an executive at VanCity for quite a number of years. I'm the CEO of Brightside Community Homes. I've been on boards and been board chair of a number of organizations, including MOTO and the BC Nonprofit Housing Association. I'm now on the board of Vancouver International Film Festival. I feel like my experience is one of bringing people together, working with levels of government, finding solutions, getting things done. And I feel like those are attributes that lend itself to the mayor, of leading the city, creating a positive vision, bringing people together, and making things happen. And so, yeah, that's why I'm going for mayor and not city council.
So you've talked a lot about the future and wanting a better Vancouver. Let's get into what that actually looks like. What do you think the issues are with Vancouver right now, and how do you fix them?
Yeah, so, I mean, the thing I keep thinking about more and more, I mean, so much of what I'm thinking about falls into the bucket of affordability. So obviously, housing affordability is key. I could talk your ear off. We could do a whole show just on housing. That's where I spent the last several years of my life. We need to build different types of housing in different types of neighborhoods. We absolutely need to create more housing choice. So housing is a major factor in affordability. That's self-evident. But as I get more into this, I think about a few other levels of affordability. One, you know, we sort of talk a lot in the campaign about like pipes, parks, pools, and transportation. I really wish, I guess public transportation maybe is a better way to put it. That way it's to four Ps. But making it easier to get around will ease household budgets. We got to get people going places without being stuck in traffic all the time. And even from an economic point of view, making sure goods can make their way across the city really helps, you know, unlock the engines of the economy. And then I think about like those kind of facilities that we all use, right? Every resident of Vancouver uses libraries, parks, community centers. Many of us use childcare. I mean, I don't anymore, but I did for a long time. These are things that we all use, but those with less means rely on to get by. And if we have vibrant libraries, community centers, public facilities, that really does help people stay in Vancouver and build a good life for themselves. So those are a few of the ideas we're talking about, but a lot of it does fall under affordability.
One of the ways Ken Sim has tried to address that affordability, especially recently, is the zero budget increase, right? His argument would be we can't put more tax burden. To pay for a lot of the things you're talking about, you got to increase property taxes. So first, are you in favor of increasing property taxes, and how do you kind of square that argument he would probably put back to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this was a really damaging policy, right? The zero means zero budget. I'm using air quotes there, obviously. You know, at a time when we need to be investing in our city, and a time when we face challenges and opportunities, this is not the time to freeze property taxes. And we heard from hundreds of people who came to City Hall or called in, many of whom were property owners, saying, no, like, raise my taxes. And I believe even city's own data showed that most homeowners were in favor of some kind of modest property tax increase. And so, yeah, I think property taxes are, we don't have a lot of revenue levers in the city, right? Property taxes is the big one. And if we want to, you know, create a vibrant city, I think a lot about the city we want to live in, not just, you know, one mayoral term, but like 20, 30, even 40 years from now, it means we have to invest, especially in those facilities where, you know, we drive by wonderful new libraries and community centers, but we also, you know, drive or bike by many older facilities that are clearly in need of either repair or replacement. And we have to stay on top of that. And if we let infrastructure become static, then we will pay for it. Like, that zero means zero budget will cost Vancouver money, just not maybe this year, but it will not make life any easier.
So let's talk a little bit more about housing. You talked about building more kinds of housing in more areas of the city. This has become kind of a flashpoint between the other mayors in Metro Vancouver, many of the other mayors, and the province, where the province has taken this largely top-down approach of dictating what cities have to do to their zoning codes to try to allow that kind of housing to happen. Where do you fall on that kind of debate between the cities and the province? What do you think the role of the mayor of Vancouver is in that debate?
Yeah, so two things, thanks for asking that. Two things come to mind. One is, I mean, I think Vancouver wants to build. We've got to enable policies that projects that, especially those projects that attract tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars in provincial or federal funding, like, we can receive those and we're ready to go. And often they need to be kind of shovel ready. And that means the city council has a role to play, making sure that those projects get to the point where they can receive that funding quickly. You know, putting up walls to that kind of investment in our city makes no sense to me. We've got to be ready to build. I think we need to do what we can to, while the money is flowing provincially and federally, to receive that money and make things happen. But also, like, part of your question, I've got a long track record of working with lots of different kind of people under sometimes very difficult circumstances. And I think Vancouver needs to have the best relationship possible with other mayors and council. You know, we are a unique situation where we're a large Canadian city, but we're actually, you know, 22 different municipalities. And so Vancouver is sort of, you know, a big player in that, but we're not the only player. And I think that my track record of working with different kinds of people and having good dialogue, sometimes you have to agree to disagree, that's okay, but you can have respectful dialogue and work with others and not pick up your toys and go home.
On housing, just one more question. What mix do you think it takes to get real affordability, right? There's a lot of debates, I think even especially in one city, about non-market versus market, requiring affordability, like certain requirements as part of zoning. How do you get affordable housing? That's what you talked about. So dive into the specifics here.
Yeah, no, that's good. So again, two or three things come to mind. One is we need to be in a position that any government money that could possibly flow to Vancouver does so. And that means one of the great things is we have a very sophisticated non-profit sector, co-ops included, who know how to build, who have learned how to build, have seen a record amount of funding provincially and federal over the last 7 years. And we're in a good position. So let's do what we can to build that non-market housing, because that is the kind of deeply affordable housing that will really make a difference. Okay, so that's one. But we know there isn't enough money flowing to solve the crisis. So it can't just be about non-market housing. We'd need 10 times the amount of investment we've had to get to even a number that would do that. So that's why I talk about like different built forms in different neighborhoods. You know, right now people often have the choice between single family homes, and no one can, like, who can afford those, and towers. And towers are good where there's density rich environments, and that's good. But there are small scale developers and builders in this city who could build small scale apartment buildings on single family home lots, who can build more than just a duplex or a triplex. Like, in some areas, that's good. That is increasing density. But, you know, we need to build low and medium density in every neighborhood. So my hope is that over time, you would see housing prices come down, both in terms of ownership and rental. Right now, we just kind of build two types of housing for the most part, and we need more different types of housing.
I want to pivot now to one of the big stories locally this week is London Drugs announcing it's going to close its Woodward's office or storefront, citing, in their words, the crime and public drug use that they've had to deal with over the last number of years, and it's not a new issue, according to them. How do you address these kind of issues where the loss of that major retailer, possibly others in that area, is going to have a real knock-on effect to that community?
Yeah, it's interesting. When that news came out, I had several people text it to me, you know, saying, okay, Mr. Mayor, what are you going to do? And what that says to me is people feel it, right? And some of them live in Gastown, live in the neighborhood, and some don't, but they watch it. I mean, this is a very, very challenging issue. So maybe let's break it down into a couple of things. I mean, when it comes to the neighborhood of the downtown east side, I mean, it's so unfortunate that this has become a partisan issue, right? People in that neighborhood need care. They needed it yesterday. And we do need to hold the provincial government accountable for the things they said they're going to do. We also know that the VPD say overwhelmingly that they're dealing with healthcare issues. And so we've got to work again with different levels of government, especially the provincial government, to make sure that the care is coming. But the other reality is people don't elect someone to become mayor to pass the buck or to blame others. So the city does have resources at its disposal. And let's go back to what you talked about, the zero means zero budget. Like, we can't freeze spending. You know, we can't say on one hand we've got a crisis, a housing crisis, a poison drug crisis, and then freeze spending. So we need to invest in services that when people are able to, when people are ready to receive the help they need, they can get into those services and get the help they need. Just to go in a slightly different direction, like, I live in Strathcona, I walk to work. And when I walk through the neighborhood, I see two things. I see individuals who are struggling. They are having addiction issues. It seems pretty clear, and they need support and they need help and they need care. It's not illegal to be poor. It's not illegal to be addicted. And I also see older people walking through the neighborhood, and I worry about their safety and security and vulnerability. I feel like so much in time in politics, we're being asked to choose, you know, policing versus services. And it's got to be all the above approach. We need care and services. We know that strong libraries, strong community centers, school lunch programs. These things help. They prevent the need to call the police in the first place, and cutting those services doesn't make communities safer.
The last policy question I want to ask you on is, what do you do with the park board? Are you in favor of keeping it, abolishing it, moving to a referendum?
Yeah, I think in time a referendum. I mean, here's another example where I think, you know, Ken Sim ran on, you know, I feel like if I was to sum up the vibes he ran on, it was like competence and compassion. And I mean, I've never seen such an incompetent, incurious mayor in my lifetime. Like, it's really, it's not okay. And I haven't seen the compassion, right? A compassionate mayor wouldn't have a project barrage. It's just, you know, even just naming it that is really problematic. So anyway, get back to your question. The park board was an issue that I think it is an okay public debate. I didn't actually have a very strong opinion. It's like, well, on one hand, most cities don't do this. Why do we do it? On the other hand, I'm a big fan of democracy. It's a democratically elected institution. And then he just screwed it up so royally. I feel like that debate is over for a while. So at some point, I think we bring back the debate. It's not something I'm going to change, you know, in the early part of an administration. Like, I just think we need to let it lie for a bit and just get over this sort of collective trauma of this becoming like such a screwed up issue. Like, I mean, how he handled it, not the park board itself. But yeah, because it's democratically elected, I think the only way to make a change there is through some kind of referendum and see what the public wants, and then enact that with the province.
The next question I want to ask is, if you stand for mayor, you might be facing a very crowded field, right? We already know Ken Sim is in. I think Team is running a candidate, Vancouver Liberals, and then there's the broader left progressive. How do you try to position or work with parties that are potential allies like COPE, the Greens, and not split the vote when it comes to the first past the post election that we're going to have?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. I mean, left unity is really important, and One City is at the table with, you know, Greens and COPE to try and work out, you know, a good balance between us, and I hope those talks are successful. And I must add that, like, Pete Fry also lives in Strathcona. He's a friend. I've known Pete for 15 years, maybe, close to it, and I like Pete a lot. I've been really transparent about my thinking and my plans with Pete, and I would love to work with Pete on council. But obviously I'm running with One City because I feel like myself and a One City slate of councillors are going to present a positive vision of what we can do for the city and win people over. And I think One City is really well positioned to defeat Ken Sim. Like, you know, we had substantial fundraising in 2025. We're in a good position from both a sort of a finance and spending, and as well as a volunteer perspective. So I'm very excited about our chances. The other thing I just maybe can add to that is, left unity is important, especially in these really early stages where the election is, you know, 10 months away. But more and more, like, I'm thinking about Vancouver unity. I'm thinking about presenting a vision that over the next coming months rolls along and gets people excited and encouraged and gets away from a left-right debate wherever possible and presents a vision that solves problems that people care about and can take City Hall. And so that's sort of where I'm thinking.
The last question tied to that I'll just ask is that how you beat Ken Sim, or do you have other tricks up your sleeve for, you know, you win the One City nomination and now it's the general election, you're on the debate stage against him. What is your compelling argument to win over that Vancouver unity you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, we're in the earliest stages of thinking about policies and ideas that can do that. But, you know, even my experience so far, I'm in rooms with people who are not traditionally One City members potentially, and engaging with them, hearing from them. Like, the way I lead is very much like collaborative, listening to people, taking the best ideas. I'm not an ego-driven person, and I'm finding rooms of people opening up and signing up to become One City members for the first time. And so I think we're on to something. It's early days, but I'm very excited about the momentum we're building. And yeah, there's no tricks up my sleeves. I don't even think that way, but I do think that if we're doing the right things and having the right discussions and listening to people and you know, not always agreeing with them, like, you know, there will be values and a vision that we're going to put forward. But I do think we can win for sure.
The one thing I want to ask every person I have on the show whenever I get the chance is, what is your Vancouverado? What is your little bit of trivia or history that you can share with our listeners?
I was hoping you'd ask that. The Vancouverado, awesome. Yes, I do have one, and I'm it's deeply personal to me because I, as I said, I live in Strathcona. I live in one of the Joe Way houses that sprung up from land that was appropriated to build a freeway. I think canceling a freeway running through, I lived in Seattle for 9 years during my 20s, and that freeway carves up that city, divides that city, uglifies, that's not a word, but I'm going to use it, uglifies the city. I think the fight against the freeway, my home is a very testament to that. I would not have that home if it wasn't, if the freeway had been built through it. And can I just add one thing, which is I've been lucky enough through this process to meet my first political hero, which is Mike Harcourt. He's endorsed me. And that's where he got his start, as a storefront lawyer working to stop the freeway. And so it's an issue that is both very important to Vancouver and very personal to me.
Thanks for that. If people want to sign up for your campaign or find more information, where are you on the internet?
WilliamForVancouver.ca is the website. They can donate. They can join One City. That's the most important thing. Join by January 12th. Got to get these dates right. Join by January 12th to take part in what is now the only contested mayoral election going on in Vancouver.
Thanks so much, William.
Thanks, Ian. Great to talk to you.
Welcome to the Cambie Report, Amanda Burrows.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Ian.
Not a problem. I'm really excited to talk to you. We just had our interview with William Azaroff, and now I want to know who you are and why you want to be mayor as well.
I'm just thrilled to be here. I've been listening to you folks since 2018, I guess, when Shauna Sylvester threw her hat in the ring and I was supporting her, and wouldn't miss an episode in your amazing opener. Well, tell you a bit about myself and why I'm running. Well, I'm a renter. I'm a renter and a community builder, nonprofit leader. I actually lead, I'm the executive director of First United in the downtown East Side, and we're one of the oldest organizations, if not the oldest, in the city of Vancouver. And we do essential services, frontline supports, operate shelters, meal programs. We have a legal clinic. We do systems change. We lobby. I am overseeing about $100 million Indigenous social and supportive housing project that has a community services below. So I'm just really honored to live and work in this neighborhood, which is on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and in a land that used to be called Kamkamalai, which meant the land of broad maples. So that's who I am and why I'm running for mayor. Well, I mean, the city is full of people with heart. We have renters and workers and families and seniors, and time again, all I keep hearing is that people are struggling, costs are too high. And obviously what's going on right now in the current ABC and Ken Sim, they're not doing much about it. And so I'm running because people keep asking me, is the city still meant for me? And I say, yes, the city is still meant for you. And so I am running to ensure that people can stay here and that they feel like they belong. I lead by showing up, by listening and getting stuff done. And I'm looking forward to doing that at City Hall.
So why jump straight to the mayor's chair and not seek a One City Council nomination first?
Yeah, so for decades, I've been doing community work. I've been showing up. I've been listening. I've been working alongside people to get stuff done, large projects across a variety of political spectrums, among corporations, three levels of government, just different groups and nonprofits and charities. And I know how to bring people together. And that's why I'm doing it. And people have been asking me to run for a while. So I said yes.
One of the things I asked Kennedy Stewart when he ran and announced his nomination in 2018 was it seemed like the first time his name came into the public consciousness was when Mario Canseco put out a poll asking if people would vote for him if he ran for mayor. I don't think he had a great answer for me because it might have actually been that was the first thing. And I'm not 100% sure, but I feel like your name was tossed around in a similar research co-poll or something about who would be a good choice for the next mayor. When did you first decide to seriously consider the mayor's chair?
It was in mid-September. I mean, people had been asking me to run for quite a while and from multiple parties and what my plans were. And I got really serious over the summer thinking about it. And I didn't really share much with people I shared with my parents and who is now my campaign manager, and just really went into serious discernment and thinking about what this could look like, what would be the pathway to victory, what would our mandate be, who to come alongside. And it was at the end of September, actually, when I was meeting with One City, where I made that decision. And then I became a One City member on September 30th, Truth and Reconciliation Day, as a signal, as a moment with integrity and honesty to say, if I'm going to do this and do this in a form of leadership, I want to always honor the work and reconciliation as I'm approaching this role and doing this work. And so I'm a recent One City member, but I chose One City because I do believe that they're the pathway to victory, but they're only the pathway to victory for progressive majority at City Hall if we have a unity slate on the left.
Great. And we'll come back to that, I think, towards the end. I want to get into the issues now. You mentioned affordability, people asking if this is still their city. What do you think is the biggest issue facing Vancouver, and how will an Amanda Burrows One City, you know, government, I guess, or city government fix it?
So what we're hearing from people, of course, is that they're struggling. Costs are too high. Rents are too high. Food is too high. And so we want to do something about it. I mean, ABC and Ken Sim aren't listening. And so one of the things, I was in actually Joyce Collingwood last week, the other day, and this woman came up to me and said, she was really excited to talk to me because she knows I'm a renter and she's a renter facing eviction and she's really stressed out, all of the paperwork, navigating, and she knows that I do this work in my current job. And she said to me that she wasn't asking me to do that work in my current job because she didn't feel like she was low income enough to access our services. And as she's sharing the story of such stress, and she started to cry, and it was just such a moment which just underscored our calling in this role as politicians is to show up and to listen and to act. This woman is struggling. She is still low income. She still was being evicted. She still didn't know where she was going to move. She, and all she felt was that she was going to be displaced from the current community that she is in. And so I am running for women like her. I am running to find a different pathway forward in this city that protects renters more. Renters are about 55% of our demographic in this city. It's one of the growing segments. And we are feeling the unaffordability crisis so much. And even myself as a renter, like the pathway to home ownership to stay in Vancouver just seems like it's not even part of on my vision board because I don't even see it as a possibility as to become a homeowner in this city. And so I'm running for people like her, and I'm running for ways forward that we can protect renters. By the first step would be to bring back the renter office that was taken away. That's what we need to do first.
Let's get deeper into housing then. As you mentioned, rent's too high, ownership is, you know, out of reach for many, or even those who are in it are possibly mortgage debted like myself. We've seen different things tried across the province. The province has mandated density increases, which a lot of mayors around Metro Vancouver are pushing back against. How do you navigate solving these complex issues, especially in this, you know, heightened, polarized situation between some mayors, the province, and, you know, market, non-market? How do you balance it all? How do you fix it?
How are we going to fix it? Well, you know, people don't fully care about the fights between our governments, right? People care about whether they can afford a place to live. And so that's where I'm going to start first. And when it comes to the conversations that's happening, what's so interesting is around, it's basically around density, right? So I'm pro-housing, like bottom line, I'm pro-housing. And Vancouver needs to build a lot more of it and a lot faster, especially affordable and non-market housing. But we can't just dismiss, right, people's fears about change. We can't just say that, you know, we have to acknowledge that growth really does affect people's sense of home, and that deserves respect. So the real question around these this density, and it's like the multi-unit family and towers, it's not really like a tower or no tower. It's about what's being built, for whom, and how do we take communities along in the conversation? And so density works best when people understand why it's needed, and it needs to come with real assurance. So stronger renter protections, our local services, our green space design that can enhance our neighborhood character. You know, that's so often like where people are afraid of their character being erased. So I support growth that builds housing people can actually afford and strengthens communities. So I will always push back on development if it displaces residents or ignores the people who already live there, but let's come back together and pro-housing. We need to build a housing, and we can't fight amongst our governments to do it. People don't care about that. People care about affordability, and that's what I'm here to do as mayor.
One of the other parts of your affordability pitch has been around food prices. Maybe talk a little bit more about that, because I think that's a little bit unique to your pitch. And you were in a recent spat with the mayor, I think, over this.
Yeah, Ken Sim is afraid of proposals like the one I just dropped. And what we, because he's not listening, he's not listening to people, right? And so if you can see the movement, we're in a moment right now across North America where people are coming forward to say, one of our essential services is food. You know, when Ken is talking about, you know, we're looking at the basic services and potholes. Well, what is more basic than food? Food is a basic human right, and food is a basic need. And we as governments need to be intervening into this conversation. And so what I'm proposing is a pilot project to start a community food trust. And what a community food trust does is the city would protect the land and purchase a place like Sunrise Market, which is a very affordable grocery store that is under threat to being sold and maybe no longer in community, and one of our major accesses to affordable food. And so I'm proposing that a city builds that, but I'm proposing that community operates it. I don't want a city to operate a grocery store. So where some other provocative progressive policies out there are happening in New York and Seattle, and you know, my suggestion is a community solution, which is that the community runs it. And we have such amazing bench strength and depth and expertise in our food networks in Vancouver, and I really think we need to be drawing on that more. So by dropping that this week, I can't even explain to you the amount of momentum and encouragement and excitement people have to say yes, 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 the city should be intervening into food. And when the mayor dismisses this proposal, as he said, it was ridiculous. I do not think it's ridiculous. And listening to people and keeping things affordable for people in Vancouver, and this is not just a kitchen table issue, this is literally a kitchen table issue, like what is on your table and how can you afford it. And so I'm really excited about the positive feedback we're getting, and I want to put forward more policies like this going forward for sure.
I think the challenge you're going to hear back more and more, particularly after Ken Sim's zero means zero budget, as he framed it, is proposals like this cost money. So how are you going to pay for it when raising property taxes does put a hit on people's ability to afford the city? Like, what's your response to kind of both the budget and that broader, like,
let's get back to what people are saying. So when this zero means zero budget was passed by ABC, and which is basically an austerity budget, over 630 people spoke at this, and the majority of them, beyond a majority, was the in opposition. People showed up, homeowners showed up, people were showing up to say we're okay with paying our fair share. People showed up to say how we're going about this budget process without transparency. What are we prioritizing, i.e. the police is not okay. So what this is about is looking at our budget process again, looking at our revenues and expenses, and then prioritizing what people are saying that they need and they want. And people right now need lower costs of living. And a way that we can do this as a city is have a community food trust such as this. And so it's about looking at the budget and prioritizing. That's what it is. And that is something we can do. And I'm hearing constantly from people that that's what they want. They don't want just constantly more policing first policies that we just saw with London Drugs closing in Gastown. They put so much extra police into there, and they still couldn't make it work. And so we know that a policing first policy is not a solution to what we're seeing around community safety and affordability in the city. What we need is affordable food, housing, access to voluntary treatment, access to mental health care, access to low barrier jobs. We need housing. And as mayor, I'm going to be listening to those solutions as I've been sitting on tables for years about this work and been implementing those as well.
I was going to ask you about the London Drugs closure. So maybe I'll pivot that into a little bit broader of a question about the challenges that continue to plague the downtown east side. Like, you know these firsthand, I assume, working out of First United. But talk to us about what you think needs to change there so that people feel safe, people feel respected and have dignity, and it feels like there's optimism again.
Well, the thing that's happening in the downtown east side is also happening across Vancouver. People are feeling affordability crunches everywhere. Homeless crisis is everywhere. We're seeing things that are happening in our community across the city, right? So the solution to that is to have prevention and treatment. So one of the biggest ways that we can come forward as a city is to acknowledge that people living in poverty or people who use drugs, it's not just some moral or individual failure. It's often a systems failure, right? And so let's get back to prevention. So what's the biggest thing of prevention? It's housing. So we need to get people housed. We need to get people housed across Vancouver. We need to ensure that people have access to treatment when they want it. Do you know what happens working where I do when somebody comes up to you and they say to you, I am ready, like I am ready to get into detox and treatment, but the wait lists are so long that they can't find a place to go? That's unacceptable. So we need as a city to be coming together to making sure that there's more places and spaces like detox and treatment centers. So when people are ready, that they can heal and get better. And so we don't have any of that infrastructure at the level and the volume that we need to have to ensure that that's happening. So this isn't about downtown Eastside. This is about the whole city coming together, because these issues are increasing. They're going to continue to increase until we zoom out and start getting into the prevention of it.
Let's pivot again and talk about the park board. Kent Sim has kind of been all over the place on that, but the current push has been to try to abolish the elected park board. What are your thoughts, feelings about the park board and its relationship to the city?
It's been clear over the last few years with this conversation of the park board that people really want to have a park board. And I think that following this conversation, participating in this conversation, what I've gotten from it is that our city and our residents want this board. And that I think at the end of the day, more democracy is always better than less, right? And certainly with this government, when there's some, you know, integrity issues that are coming up, et cetera, that having this extra layer and body of accountability is a very, very good thing. And so moving forward, I think that this conversation, let's keep the park board, let's just move on from here, let's do that together and listen to what people want and give us a choice. Like, you can't just unilaterally come in, elect a slate, and then say, I'm going to abolish this. This isn't how our democracy works. So we need to be asking our residents what they want.
Let's come back to the question of left unity and going into the election, right? It's looking like it'll be a crowded field like 2018 was, and the chaos of that. What are your thoughts on how to avoid that mess for the voters? And to, if one city nominates you, how do you work with COPE and Greens to only pitch one mayoral candidate if that's the goal?
Right. Well, you know, I'm focused on building a progressive majority at City Hall. Absolutely. I don't have any interest on being an opposition mayor, right? Like, and so that's going to take us having a unity slate. That's going to take us working together to come up with an agreement. And that's what I'm advocating for. I want a very unified agreement amongst the three parties to come together and to advocate for, so that we can have that progressive majority. And the way that we do that is, well, I've been building relationships across the political spectrum ever since I've been doing this work. Like, I have friends in every party, and certainly when it comes to the progressive movement, I believe I can be that unity candidate because I have friends in all the parties, and that is what my focus is. I can't underscore this enough. Our goal as progressives is to beat Ken Sim, and the only way that we do that is with unity. And I know that I can be that unity candidate, and that's what I am asking for people to come behind me to do this work. I am ready to work with people who have progressive ideas and come together with a mandate that is going to beat Ken Sim.
Is there anything else you think you need to do to win that election, right? If you have that unity, because ABC is traditionally well-funded, even more so than one city has a pretty impressive fundraising team. How do you actually get it across the finish line?
Yeah, well, people are struggling, right? And people are ready for a change. I'm hearing it time and time again. And, you know, Ken Sim and ABC aren't listening. So I'm going to win because I'm going to be able to unite the left. I'm going to win with one city because we're going to fundraise. We're going to out-fundraise. I'm a fundraiser by profession. That's what I do. I bring people along to get stuff done, and I'm going to help mobilize that with the fundraising that we're going to need to take on this. I'm not taking it for granted that they have had tons of success in fundraising, but they haven't seen me yet do it, right? And so I'm ready to do that. I'm going to win by advancing bold community-led solutions. Come on, we're going to do this. We're dropping this food policy this week. We're in a moment. People are hungry, excuse the pun, to get stuff done, to have bold solutions like this that actually care about everyday people and not just the wealthy. Like, this is important, important work. And that's how we're going to do it. And I think we can really take them on, and I can see it. And we're only going to do it if we're unified, those progressives. And that's my goal and my hope.
My last question is just the light one. What is your Vancouverada, your little bit of trivia of the city?
Okay, so I often travel back and forth to Victoria sometimes. And do you remember the bus that goes back and forth? It was like the Greyhound, it was a PCL, now it's called the Connector. Anyway, okay, so I take the Connector bus, and often there's a bus driver, and it's really kind of tailored towards tourism, and so they give a lot of facts, and I always kind of tune out because I'm like, here we go again. Anyway, there was a new bus driver, and there was a new fact that I actually listened to because I didn't know this. So in the early 1950s, Bing Crosby came to Vancouver. He had just finished a hunting trip. And so when he comes to Vancouver, goes to check in at Hotel Vancouver, and he's dressed in all denim. And they wouldn't let him check in because he was too casually dressed. They turned him away. So it turned into this whole thing where Levi's found out. And so they made Bing Crosby a tailored denim tuxedo, which is where the term Canadian tuxedo was coined from. And so I never heard that. So I was happy. I think his name was Russ the Bus Guy to share that story. And I'm like, that's so Vancouver, right? Like, we like to show up casual, right? We don't want to always be so formal. So that's my fact for your listeners.
Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
Amanda
for that.
Burrows, where can people find you if they want to get involved in your campaign?
AmandaForVancouver.ca, and you got until Monday at 11:59 to sign up for One City and vote for me to help unify the progressive movement to take on Ken Sim.
Thank you so much for your time
today. You're welcome so much.
It is January 9th, 2026, and there are 281 days until the Vancouver municipal elections. This is the Cambie Report. I'm Ian Bushfield. On today's show, we have a very special set of interviews with the two candidates seeking One City's nomination for Mayor of Vancouver, William Azaroff and Amanda Burrows. I'll throw it over to those in a second. You have until January 12th, Monday, to sign up for One City, if that's your chosen party, to vote for either of these individuals. And we will continue to monitor the mayoral race as it continues to shape up over the coming 10 months or so. We'll have lots more episodes to come this year. We're looking forward to it all. In the meantime, please make sure to support the show at patreon.com/CambieReport. Help us build the show, cover the election, get an invite to our Slack channel where we are discussing it constantly. And I'm really looking forward to you enjoying these interviews. These are two great people, and I hope you enjoy it. Let's throw it over. It is January 9th, 2026, and there are 281 days until the Vancouver municipal elections. This is the Cambie Report. I'm Ian Bushfield. On today's show, we have a very special set of interviews with the two candidates seeking One City's nomination for Mayor of Vancouver, William Azaroff and Amanda Burrows. I'll throw it over to those in a second. You have until January 12th, Monday, to sign up for One City, if that's your chosen party, to vote for either of these individuals. And we will continue to monitor the mayoral race as it continues to shape up over the coming 10 months or so. We'll have lots more episodes to come this year. We're looking forward to it all. In the meantime, please make sure to support the show at patreon.com/CambieReport. Help us build the show, cover the election, get an invite to our Slack channel where we are discussing it constantly. And I'm really looking forward to you enjoying these interviews. These are two great people, and I hope you enjoy it. Let's throw it over.